I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 50 countries. Pro quality but affordable, Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help their guitars look, sound, and play their best. After 2 years of research and development, and in collaboration with top guitar repair shops, Music Nomad developed in 2021, the Keep It Simple setup, aka KISS. And now thousands of guitar players, from beginners to pros, have learned how to set up their own guitar. They demystified the guitar setup process by developing innovative precision gauges and tools, combined with step-by-step general guidelines anyone can follow and set up their guitar to play and sound great. With their KISS method and their gauges, you can check the vital areas of your guitar and use their toolkits to perform your own setups. They have a 24-page instructional booklet available in 7 languages, downloadable for free, and many how-to videos, both by setup tasks as well as many complete setup video tutorials for popular brands such as Fender, Gibson, Taylor, PRS, and more. Not only is it fun, but a properly set up guitar takes your playing and sound to a whole new level. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com. Their website has a very cool setup hub section where you can find everything you need to know so you can start setting up your guitar properly. Follow them on social media and at musicnomadcare. Kiss your guitar with Music Nomad's Keep It Simple setup.
Matt, I've got my A Dad Joke A Day joke book to read from today.
Okay.
Yes, okay, here we go. Right. What did the janitor say when he jumped out of the closet? Supplies? And welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week, once again, finally, after a three-week hiatus, Matt Knight.
Hiatus indeed, Joe. Three whole weeks.
Three whole weeks, yeah.
Probably my longest time away, apart from maybe when I was
apart
in
from
Japan.
When you went to Japan, yeah. And that was years ago. That was probably 5-6 years ago.
That was 6 years ago now. But yeah, it's good to be back. I've missed it.
Yes,
I didn't want JD or, you know, one of the other ruffians to take
Carter.
My space.
Yes, yeah, quite. Yeah. Philip Carter and JD have been picking up the slack. But it's lovely.
Slack.
Yeah, exactly. But it is lovely to have you back, and I am exhausted.
Aren't you always, Joe?
Yeah, but I'm extra exhausted. I was playing a gig in London last night.
My old neck of the woods.
Yes, in Balham at the Bedford, which is a wonderful little venue.
So the Bedford is one of hosts one of London's oldest comedy clubs.
Banana
Comedy Club, I think it's called. And basically everyone who's anyone has from British comedy has done some sort of stand-up there. They've had many an artist. I think Ed Sheeran.
That's right. They've got a quote from Ed Sheeran in the green room, in fact.
Yes. And about how much also
he loves the venue.
Wrestling. A few times around there, they do wrestling. Because I guess for maybe American listeners, I don't know, whoever's ever been to an English pub, it's a giant pub. But actually, they spent, I think, £1 million renovating it during or just before COVID. And then it basically like completely shut down. But it's like two pubs in one with an entire venue out the back and in a complete hotel above it in London's brunch capital of Balham. London, Balham is the brunch capital, but it's a great venue. Very, very cool venue.
Great venue. It's very got a Ronnie Scott's feel to it because it's quite theatre-like, the actual venue room. And in fact, Matt, it was a seated gig. So just like they do the comedy nights, it was all circular tables and little chairs around it in the pit. And of course, you can stand on the second tiered bit and look down at the bands, or you can watch from the background where the bar is at the back. But it was for an all day of festival called A Sunday in September, which is hosted by a group of people called London Prog Gigs.
Right.
And they're fantastic. The guys who heads that up, London Prog Gigs, wonderful. Just a great little organization of progressive rock enthusiasts who go to see a lot of prog gigs all together and also host their own shows often at the Bedford. But it's proper old prog rockers. So the average age of the audience and sort of the organizers is, you know, mid-60s. Hence why it's a seated gig. But they're always so well attended and they're always fantastic. And we were very honored to get invited to play that sort of show. It was a lot of fun. Of course, a lot of the other bands that play are old prog bands. You know, so they've got like old prog names like the Emerald Dawn and stuff like that.
I love it.
Yeah.
That is so. It was basically proper old school prog, and they were like, "What are these polymath ruffians doing?"
Oh yeah. We went down well, but I think the band before us turned up with two timpanis.
Great. Oh, I'm in already.
A gong behind the drummer, and a concert bass drum. So that's approximately a 50-inch, you know.
Oh, my God. Big
bass drum. It took up half the stage. I think he hit it twice.
That's just one band.
Yeah, that was just...
What was the average age of this band?
Yeah, they were... actually, some of the members were a bit younger. The drummer was younger and the guitarist were younger. Because I think, really, they were sort of sessioning for this one fella who had been... who'd been going since the 70s, and he was there with a Mellotron, but one of the new digital Mellotrons, so he wasn't lugging a whole Mellotron in.
Yeah, I was going to say, not even old proggers have got to be that crazy, surely.
Exactly. He had a good old trusty Yamaha P200, which is one of my favourite stage pianos. I think they're great. Like old stage pianos, the P200 was introduced probably turn of the century, around 2000. It was one of the first really good digital stage pianos,
right?
But it weighs 30 kilograms, so it's a two-man lift. It's a big thing, and it has like built-in speakers but as well, which you can use as monitors, because they're actually 8-inch speakers that put out like 30 watts, so they're actually quite substantial and sound good as well, so people often use those for monitoring in a show. But but anyway, yeah, he had that and a whole PC. I mean, a desktop. He brought a desk on with a PC and a screen and a mouse.
But hold on, what age of PC are we talking? Talking like some sort of retro thing with...
I mean, he couldn't have been under 80. Certainly, I won't name the band because to be honest, his patter in between songs left a lot to be desired when it comes to outdated opinions on the world. It was just ramblings of but musically very, very good. But yeah, they were the band on before us, and then there was a break, and then we were on. So of course, I think
were you the headliner, or
no? There was one band over from Chicago in the States that were on after us,
right?
And yeah, us on before them. But it was our last show with our saxophone player Chris Olsen. He played the last gig. And oh, actually, I'll tell you what, Matt, I turned up, sort of said my hi's and everything, loaded in, went down to the green room to grab a beer, and there was a fella that the organizers had employed. I'm sorry, I immediately forgot his name after we were introduced.
Oh, I love that.
I do that. So I'm so bad at that. I go, hi, it's Joe, who are you? And they go, oh yeah, Keith. And I'm like, and it just goes in and then back out. And I never...
my name is Joe. Oh wait, yeah. The conversation's already gone in a totally different direction.
Yeah, quite. But yeah, this fellow was down there and he turned around and, you know, sort of, I was like, oh, hi mate, how's it going? He was like, so tell me, have you found your dream Telecaster yet? And it turns out he's a Patreon supporter and podcast listener.
Absolutely brilliant.
But that was, so that was really nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
On a slight tangent, you're talking about Yamaha pianos. Here's one for you, Joe. Uh-huh. Because talking of old prog,
right.
Of course, Yamaha very much at the forefront of the synthesizer revolution, especially for Keith Emerson of Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Absolutely. Of course, one of the original ultimate old prog bands. Yeah. So Yamaha, back in 1975, launched the GX1.
Right.
So the GX1 was an analog polyphonic synthesizer organ.
Right,
that
sounds great.
Was
I'll look it up.
Basically, the ultimate synth, but it was the first, basically one of the first all polyphonic synth organs. So it's a 3-tiered organ that comes with its own stand, set of foot pedals, and bench.
The stand, yeah, but isn't the floor piece also cut into it? So yes. the bass pedals on the floor, dear listener, are cut into what is a floor piece. It looks like Data's station in Star Trek Next Generation.
Exactly. But what made me think of this, because you mentioned you had this old stage piano that you saved, what, weighed 30 kilos? Is that what you estimated, Joe?
Yeah, it's 30. I know, because I tried to buy one the other week.
So the GX1, if you could afford one, I don't think there's any for sale anywhere.
Yeah, I'm just looking now. I can't find any.
The GX1 launched at $60,000, or the equivalent of $396,000 in today's money, at the NAMM convention in 1973, and weighed a combined total of 951 kilograms.
What?
Or 2,096 pounds.
What?
Because the console weighed 300 kilograms. The pedal board and stand weighed 87 kilograms, right. Each of which it then came with 4 tube-powered speakers.
Yeah, okay, so
which weighed 141 kilograms each.
Absolutely incredible. And I have found one, Matt, of the Yamaha EX1 synthesizers organs. I've just put a link to it in our little chat on the call. So you can click on there. I'll share this on the group, on the Guitar Nerds group,
fantastic.
Dear listener. Yeah, the speakers are amazing. The 3-tier organ, the amount of controls. Oh, it just looks fantastic.
Local pickup only.
I know, that's a bit annoying that they won't post it. And it's in Germany. £13,202.79 when you convert into the euro. The pound's up against the euro at the moment, so I think maybe that's a deal, Matt. That's a steal.
Well, here you go. So it includes the 2 TX3 tone cabinets. Each cabinet contains 14 speakers. but yes, obviously Yamaha at the forefront of old prog. I think they only made something like, I remember talking to someone about this at work, and I think they basically only made like a handful, and they only went to like Stevie Wonder and Keith Emerson and and also Benny and Anderson of ABBA. But imagine being the roadie for that. It weighed a ton.
Yeah.
A literal ton. So be thankful that he didn't have that, and be thankful we have Quad Cortex and Helix and that now, Joe. You can just run everything into monitors. You can run everything into a computer. So pretty bonkers.
Yeah.
What was he actually using the computer for?
The genre of that band was a symphony prog. So I think there was probably quite a lot of MIDI stuff because the P200, I believe, is MIDI compatible, but maybe one of the other keyboards were. So I imagine because there were a lot of strings and things being sequenced, and he was the other band members were a bass player, two guitarists, and the drummer. So he was having to do a lot of the legwork, I think, for any backing.
Any drum solos? Old prog seems to be full of every album seems to have at least one drum solo that you sort of don't realize you're in until about halfway through, and you're like, wait, is this a drum solo?
Only the band that played after us, only drum solo I heard.
It was good.
Nice. In fact, that was the Chicago band, and I met their bass player. They were traveling light, they were on tour, but traveling super duper light, so they had very, very little stuff and were borrowing an awful lot of our stuff. But it turned out their bass player was actually Tim Sizer, who owns Lowdown Custom Basses, which are a custom bass brand from Chicago.
Right.
So that was cool. We got to talk about basses and stuff like that. In true, like, bass luthier fashion, of course, he turned up with some super poplary burled six string.
Oh, yeah. It's like, what's the most ridiculous wood and how many strings can I fit on this?
Exactly.
No one builds a, you know, four-string P bass.
Yeah, exactly.
It's got to be, like, yeah,
something ridiculous.
Indeed. But what about you then, Joe? What was your normal rig of choice?
Well, my normal rig, I took two of the Neo 112 Ashdown bass cabs because they're super light, super portable, really lovely. I took the little original 500 head, which is their tiny, teeny-weeny head with just a 5-band EQ on it. I actually leave everything flat because I do everything off of the EQ on my board. I've started using the Ashdown Geezer Butler preamp on my board, so that's doing actually the amp sound.
That's the 2-channel one with the 2 VU meters in.
That's right, yeah, two VU meters.
So you've got
meters.
That is pretty old prog for you right there, isn't it?
It's very, yeah, exactly. But that was it. I was quite old prog, old rock set up, really, because I have my Roger Waters signature precision bass.
I bet they love that. Pink Floyd too popular to be cool in the old prog scene.
No, there were a few Pink Floyd t-shirts. I tell you what, I when we were sound checking, I played Money, the bass line from Money, and I think I got a round of applause just for that from the few people that were knocking around at the back during the sound check.
Excellent.
But yeah, it was great to use that. I tell you what, the guitarist in the headlining band, because he didn't have an amp, and they had a Katana. The venue had a Boss Katana. It was great. They had a Fender Frontman and a Boss Katana, which, you know, the Fender Frontman used to be the amp that a lot of venues had because it was very affordable and it looks like a Fender and it doesn't have valves in it. So, you know, ideally it's going to be very reliable. You can spill drinks on it and it still works, that sort of thing. But of course, they never really sounded very good. The Frontman wasn't a great amplifier. It wasn't a bad one by any means, but it really is. It's not a great amp.
They served a purpose.
Exactly.
And that purpose was to amplify young punk kids make a noise.
Exactly.
Which is fine.
But I really feel like the Katana should start to fill that gap in a lot of venues. Like, you couldn't spend less money on an amp if you tried, and it's versatile and brilliant. But this guitar player, he had a Sur. I think it was a Sur. I didn't actually see the headstock look Sur-like. But he was needed like a high gain, quite a modern guitar sound. He was very pinch harmonic proggy sort of thing. And he had his pedal board, and he had like a little, I didn't see what it was, but he had a preamp on there. And I was sort of backstage. They were talking about what they were going to do. And he was saying, oh, they've just got the Katana there, so maybe I'll just go direct into the front house. And I was sort of had to step in and be like, I'm sorry, mate. You know, if have you used a katana before? And he was like, no, but you know, they're like, just, it's just an affordable amp by an effects pedal company. And I had to be like, no, it's a fantastic amp. And so I got talking to him about it, and I was like, you know, it depends what you need, because if you want a clean amplifier, if you're using all your drives there, you can't do better than a Katana for loads of headroom, clarity, as clean as you like. I'll show you how to set it up for that sort of thing. And because, of course, there's the trick with the using the master volume and the volume to really get all that lovely warm headroom. I was like, also, he was like, no, I want the amp to do a lot of gain. And I was like, well, that's also fine, because the high gain, the setting the brown sound on the amplifier is, what do they call that on the Katana? It doesn't matter.
What, the brown sound?
Yeah.
It's just called brown.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Okay.
That's why I was getting so confused. I was like, but you've said what it is.
I didn't know if they had some funny name for it, like call it, I don't know, sort of, HP source or something like that.
No, it's called brown because everyone knows what that means.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So I showed him how to set it up. And you know what? He sounded great, Matt. Absolutely brilliant.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it's one of those things that, you know, we talk about a lot, and it's one of those products that, like the Baja Telly, like the Blues Junior, like many other things that we've talked about many times, it is good. It works, but it not only works, it works beyond expectations.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
As you just described there, you know, I think, and for me, you kind of always, there's an inevitable question of like, you know, if Fender make 40,000 guitars a year in their Mexican factory, like where do they all go? And you just realize there's so many people that still haven't picked up that type, that a Mexican Fender or an American Fender or, you know, like say they're like a Gitana. It's like, you know, possibly the biggest selling amp of the last few years. And there's still people that are like, don't like the look of it. I haven't even tried it.
Well, exactly. You know? I mean, this guy obviously had taste. His board was very nice. He had some great, some great pedals there. Certainly the gear, the band in general had very nice stuff. What little stuff they brought. His guitar was obviously $3,000 plus, you know.
Yeah.
Nice pedal setup. I think he just hadn't tried a Katana because the Katana's a $300 amp. You know, it was just that. He'd written it off as a budget piece of equipment because we're so used to, in the guitar world, you get what you pay for, but there are occasionally exceptions to that rule.
I think having worked in a guitar store or guitar stores, you know, for a decade, that actually some people just want the most expensive thing. You know, I certainly remember times it's like, oh, what sort of budget have you got? And they're like no budget, and you're like, but you must have some sort of budget, and they're like, no, just show me, and you're like, oh, okay, well, let's, you know, you don't want to go in with the $3,000 custom shop or then $3,000 custom shop, so you go with American Standard, and they're like, what's the level up from this, and then like, basically, what's the most expensive one?
And I remember customer there,
you know, there's been times, you know, there have been times where people just go in and be like, point at a $10,000 guitar and go, cool, can I buy that one? Yeah. And you're sort of like, do you want to plug it in? They're like, oh, I just want to buy it. So, you know, you forget that some people do write off, you know, maybe that's not the case for this person, but there are some people that just go, you know, I've got the money, so I'm going to buy the best, and the best is the most expensive one, rather than going, what do I need? They're just going, what can I spend it on?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Thanks for doing my work for me, Joe.
That's all right. No worries.
And maybe he went and bought a Katana and, you know, that's another one. That's another one. So it's your commission. Your
there you go.
Your Spotify 0.01 pence. I'll add it into the. I'll add it into the kitty.
Thanks very much. Thanks. But we finished that show. I didn't drink too much at the show, you know, because it was our first show for a couple of months. I knew I had a lot of work to do today. But I missed the last train back to Angmering, so I had to stay at my guitarist's place when we got back around midnight, and then he had a bottle of Jameson's Black Label, which is very nice. So we thought we'd have one and listen to a bit of a record. Yeah, we sort of
just drank the whole bottle.
Drank the whole bottle, yeah. Went to bed at like 5 a.m. And then at 7 a.m. he had to get up to go to work. And so I had to get on a train over here and I really had to work today. So I am absolutely exhausted.
Oh, no.
Here at Guitar Nerds, we are massive fans of StringJoy guitar strings, and you should be too. Strings are such a fundamentally important part of being a guitarist and a guitar nerd, which you all are. Yet often when it comes to strings, we overlook them. We spent years just buying the handful of standard sets out there, instead of seeking out the same quality we look for in our guitars, effects and amps. Scott at StringJoy and the StringJoy team are massive nerds about guitars and guitar strings, and they've worked very hard to create extremely high quality sets of electric, acoustic, bass and mandolin strings, both in a broad range of gauges and the unique option to custom design your own set, which has frankly become an essential for me to explore alternate tunings and try new things. StringJoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock StringJoy yet, ask them to.
But on the positive side, you did get your dream telly, Joe.
I did. I finally did it, dear listener. I made the decision with the help of Philip Carter. Actually, from the 40 Watt Podcast. I realised that I wasn't. I know it sounds like a little thing, dear listener, but I just wasn't going to accept a 9.5-inch radius on what's supposed to be a 52. If it was going to be, you know, a proper Blackguard Telecaster, it had to have the things that the old Blackguard Telecaster had. One of those that's always changed is the 7.25 radius. So my only two options are the Japanese TL-52, which is very good, and the American Vintage, and of course American Original. American Original, they do a 51. American Vintage, they did a 52. The American Vintage guitars were what existed from the start of 2000 to around 2020, I guess.
Right.
And then it's been American Original after that. So those were the choices. I know I have Custom Shop, dear listener, and other things, but those are the two that I'd nailed it down to. And the problem with the Japanese TL-52s is they don't do butterscotch properly. It's not actually butterscotch. It's just plain wood. You know, it's just a light wood. Or at least they just don't stain it in a way where it looks like those old 52s do. So I was giving these two options to Philip, and he was like, you'll just be unhappy if you don't just spend the money. So I was like, right, fine, I will. And there was now the American Vintages normally go for like 1700-1800, and I found one for a bit less on Reverb, sent an offer through, see if I could get even more off. And and I got a message back just accepting it. I was like, oh, well, you know, I expected them not to go for it, for the low ball.
Well, there you go.
And they went for it. And I was like, oh, okay, fantastic. So I have an American Vintage 52 Telecaster Butterscotch Blackguard. Now, the things that were different about this one, because of course it's secondhand, still came with the ashtray cover. Yes, I got the ashtray cover for the bridge pickup. Still came with a strap and all this stuff in the lovely tweed case, dear listener. The only thing that changed is they had swapped in one of the four-way pickup selectors like you get in the Baja. So you have your three positions, you have bridge, neck and bridge, neck, and then the fourth position is the bridge and the neck in series, so you get a more modern humbucking sound, which I do not want. So I fortunately it came with the original harness as well. So, and the original for the 52 doesn't give you bridge, neck, it gives you bridge, neck with the tone rolled off.
Yes.
Because Leo designed those original Telecasters to be basses as well as guitars. The idea of that neck position with the tone rolled off is that you play bass lines with your thumb on a Telecaster. So you could have a band with two guitar players with the tellies. One of them could do the bass line for one song, the other do the guitar line, and they could switch around. That was how he envisaged it.
Well, because I guess what... So the first telly, well, the Snakehead telly, the original one was, what, 49, then the Broadcaster was 1950, and what, P-Bass was 51?
Yeah, 51.
So, you know, you've got a telly, you know, and then you've got the no-cast, and then, yeah, you come to the Telecaster, so 51, 52. So I guess, you know, some people weren't going to buy a bass. I mean, electric bass wasn't even a thing at that point, really, was it? You know, Fender...
Well, exactly. They constantly were trying to sort of, you know, for the first 10, 20 years of electric bass, so many companies weren't sure it was going to stick around. You think about how differently just Fender and companies in general looked at bass when it first started. You know, look at Gibson's first offering, the EB1, that came out like 53, 54, something like that. And, that, you know, that came with, that looks a bit like the EB1, dear listener, looks a bit like a Hofner violin bass, but it's actually solid. It has painted on F holes, and it came with a telescopic sort of bit that fits into the stand that fits into your bottom strap button so that you could play it standing up. Because they also figured, well, most bass players don't know how to play a guitar, you know, across their neck. They're used to playing a double bass. So we'll make this play like a double bass. That was why the aesthetic was supposed to look like a double bass and all the rest. Obviously, Fender went for the P bass, and that took off a lot more. But, you know, it wasn't like they were happy with it. Look at they released the Bass 6 only a decade later to try and redefine how bass was going to be played. The Bass 5 as well, 14 frets and 5 strings with a high C. You know,
well, I think, interestingly, on a bit of slightly related, but a bit of a side note, I was reading, I think it was Guitarist magazine or Total Guitar had a 150th anniversary, Epiphone 150th anniversary of article, and they were talking about the kind of story about how Gibson came to own Epiphone. And originally they thought they were just buying the bass business because they had a really successful bass business doing upright basses.
Right.
You know, because even then, so we're talking, you know, I think this was 1950s, you know, everyone was playing acoustic bass. I mean, the electric guitar was so new, most people didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, realistically, it's mad how far we've come in such a short space of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I've also got some Green pickups. Oh, Green pickups are fantastic, dear listener. You should absolutely check them out. I did a little video of me unboxing the Green pickups I got sent. So I got them to make me a proper 51 style Alnico 2 and Alnico 3 set.
What was in there already?
Well, they were the Fender, the American vintage 50. They're just the vintage pickups. You know, Fender hadn't done like this is like the 52s. It's a bit like how they do Squire Classic Vibe 50s Telecaster. You know, it's the pickups are like, this is roughly around this time. But I don't think they're not amazing. They're not blowing my socks off, you know, the pickups. They're good. They're good.
Right.
Really good. But I just thought, you know, why not put something amazing in them? So Green pickups seem like a really good shout for that sort of thing. They've aged them. I've got like aged 51 style pickups to go in there. So they look super cool. They're going to sound great. I know the build quality is fantastic. So I'll do demos and stuff as soon as I've fitted them. I need to get that done.
Nice.
Will be soon, but that's going to be great. I bought the guitar from a shop on Reverb, and I should have gone to them direct because we ended up talking afterwards. And I didn't really realize until I came to pay for it. I was like, oh, because you never look at the shop. You just, you know, you're looking at the instrument. But it was this little Manchester guitar shop called Rigby Music. And they are absolutely fantastic. Like a really cool shop. They, in fact, do these awesome like parts caster style guitars that I often see. I even thought about commissioning one. They do like affordable, it's almost sort of semi-custom shop. So they'll build and refinish whatever you want. You know, right. So you could, I could have had her 51 made from them or something weird and wacky. They do great prices on it, but I'd noticed their books had just closed. And to be honest, I was always a bit worried about like resale on doing something like that. So I knew I wanted to go for that. But I started talking to the team at Rigby Music afterwards. I'm going to read actually, because I asked them for a bunch of information on the shop, and I'm going to read it straight from the reply, because it's so good. It's very eloquent, and I think the shop is fantastic. It's theguitarandbassshop.co.uk is Rigby Music, dear listener, if you want to go and check that out. But okay. So here we are. I'll just read it straight off there. I opened the guitar and bass shop 1 year ago after years of repairing and setting up guitars as a side to a 20-year career in teaching. So he's a good person. During COVID, I identified a need for people to come to talk, not just about guitars, but a friendly space where you could have a coffee and relax. Also, my wife wasn't too happy about having 30 guitars in the dining room being repaired all the time. The core principle is accessibility. So that means providing accessible secondhand instruments. Whilst he does stock some very high-end stuff, I make sure everything is set up and playing great, whether it's £100 or £3,000. Music lessons shouldn't be for the rich. Our group lessons provide really accessible way into music, and in regular events that they host, custom instruments they also feel should be accessible to pro musicians, not just the super rich. This extends to our work with charities such as Olympias Music and Arc Stockport, where I provide instruments and service. Last year, I gave away 40 guitars to people who may otherwise have not been able to afford to access music, along with a lesson, and we're very open to donations. Each of these guitars is fully set up and repaired to make sure it's a great playing experience. The custom builds I make are complete one-offs, with each one being completely unique, with builds including everything from tribute guitars to Neil Young to in offset form, which I'll talk about in a minute, dear listener, reverse jazz masters, offset baritones, to a current project to raise money for Levenshulme Pride, where you can win a rainbow guitar, one that's layered up in classic Fender colors and then relicked back to reveal a rainbow.
Like it. Yeah. I like it. That's the kind of thing I'd have. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I specialize in Cuda casters. I've shipped these out to several countries, and he plays electric slide guitar. There is a strong reuse and recycle ethos in the shop. Custom builds often include various parts customers already have. The shop has become a large part of the Levenshulme life, and I have now moved into being full time with a highly successful first year behind us.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
that was I'll leave it there. That's that was kind of the shot. But it's doing brilliant stuff for his community, great stuff for charity. I love the idea of this Pride guitar. That sounds super cool. But you should check it out, dear listener, theguitarandbassshop.co.uk. There's information on the...
Where did you say? In Manchester?
Yeah, I think it's Manchester. He said Levelsham, which I'm so sorry. I have absolutely no idea where things are as soon as they're north of London.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
but some of the stuff is absolutely fantastic. If you look at the builds, you know, one of the first build, dear listener, that comes up, if you click on the custom stuff on Rigby Music, is... a Fiesta Red Telecaster with a matching headstock and a gold foil in the middle. And that's it. That's the only pickup. And then just like a simple bridge.
Love it.
It looks great.
Love it. So now that you've got your guitar from this store then, Joe, what's next? What's the next dream guitar? How are you moving on to the next one?
No, that's the point. I need to stop now. That's it. I'm so happy with my P basses. I'm really happy with this Telecaster. I guess I'm more Fendery than I realized I was. But that is actually something I was thinking about the other day. I was like, I really should have a good Gibson. You know what I'm missing right now? Something very vintage.
Right.
So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe.
Well, we've got Guitar Summit around the corner. Maybe there'll be something. Maybe there'll be something there.
Oh yeah.
We'll have to see. Actually, I don't know if they've got it this year or not. I'm just on their website because the year that I went, I think, which was quite a few years ago now. Yeah, they are doing it 5 minutes away from where the Guitar Summit is. There's also the Guitar Summit flea market, which, right, I think is like a secondhand kind of setup where basically a bunch of people can go and sell stuff.
I had no idea this was a thing.
Yeah, it will take place this year, just right down the corner from the event hall. And I guess, yeah, for any listeners who might be there, we'll be there all weekend. So if there's any Brattons that you know are going, we should check out, let us know.
Yeah. Yeah. The I was looking through the list, and Matt, you and me are obviously, we're going to have a little bit of a chat about what we want to see and who we want to talk to while we're there. But I did, in fact, see something. Here we are. They replied to me. A company called On Guitars. O-N, like to turn on a thing.
Okay.
On Guitars, if you check them out on Instagram, so they are listed actually as so it's Christoph Noe. He's listed himself as an entrepreneur on Instagram, so I think it's very much a little one-man operation, but very modern bass guitars and guitars as well. Kind of modern meets retro, lots of pop colors and pinks and things. Ooh. Like that. You'd be very, have you found a little thing?
I have. Yeah. Like, reminds me a little bit of the kind of the guitars, just a tiny bit of the, Harmony Juno kind of vibe, that sort of small body.
Yeah. I think they've got a bit of a millimetric feel to them.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
They're sort of quite modern, but they've got a short scale bass called the Pit 451, which they put up. That's what I saw, and they said, I saw that on Instagram, and they'd said that this guitar was going to be at Guitar Summit. So I like reached out and was like, "Oh, this looks awesome! I want to play this." But it's
what did they say? Did they say, "Who are you?"
Yeah, stop messaging me. How did you get this number?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's thanks to the asymmetrically wound coils, you get a single coil sound without compromise, and additionally a fatter, more modern sound if you go for humbucking mode. So that's pretty cool. Two pickups that can be jazz bassy, or I guess Music Man Stingray-y, which is pretty cool. But they look great. Look really clean, sort of retro modern.
I think the cool thing about the Guitar Summit show, there's definitely some big brand names there, but not the big ones aren't there, as it were. But you get a lot of European...
Yeah.
Sort of brands and sort of boutique brands. I was just having a look, but unfortunately our friends Voronseiku Guitars and Grouter Effects don't look like they're going to be there this year.
Oh, really? That's a surprise.
It's a shame. But a lot of guitar brands, there'll be so many guitars, many strange guitars.
I'd had enough beers last time that I was very close to putting a deposit down on a Nick Huber.
I wonder if they'll I'm sure they'll be. May I was just having a look through.
They were there last year. They had a really big stand upstairs. There's like a on the top floor of Guitar Summit, or is it the top floor? I think it's the
top
floor.
Have the Guitar Heaven.
Yeah,
is
that's
that what
it.
They called
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and it's just all like it's like companies like Shabbat Guitars and Nick Huber and you know those people that other company that none of the guitars are really designed to be played. They're all works of art.
Oh yeah. Oh no, Grouter will be there. I just spelt his name wrong.
I see.
Let's have a look. I'm trying to see. There's a lot of brands here that are like first time as well. So I think there's going to be some new brands there. I would certainly. I mean, I'd love another Nick Huber, but definitely can't afford.
Oh, there's so Nick much. Huber. I had a bit of. I've probably told this on the podcast before, dear listener. Probably a year ago, but you know, after we did Guitar Summit, but I got into a bit of an embarrassing situation with Nick from Nick Huber, where I was sort of talking to him about, you know, maybe putting down a deposit, and I was like, I was talking about one of the basses that he makes, and I was like, I was like, what are they like four K? And he's like. 7 I was like, oh I see.
Nick Huber will be there. I should see if my friend still works there who sorted out the Krautst form, which I was playing this very morning.
Really? Were you now?
But yeah, I would love, well, they make a lot of great guitars, but the one that I would certainly be keen on buying the Surfmeister, because I think that is such a cool guitar. But they make I love their bass. We've talked about it before, but their bass is awesome.
Yes, it is incredibly cool.
Yeah. So we'll be off there in 10 days time, so we'll certainly have a podcast full of how much did Joe drink and what did he buy?
We don't know, dear listener. I haven't worked out whether or not there'll be a podcast that week, because unfortunately it will fall over when the podcast would be released. Me and Matt are going to try and record one when we're there. It's really going to depend on whether or not I can get the internet to up, you know, enough quality internet to upload a
That's always podcast. The key, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. We'll see what occurs. We'll play it back.
If not, we'll do a bumper episode the week after.
Exactly. Now, dear listener, don't forget, you are still, it's the final days now of your chance to win a Chapman ML1X. I always forget the numbers and letters. Fantastic guitar by Chapman, a lovely, simple HSS Strat-style guitar and a very tasteful dark ash finish. All you've got to do is fill in this form. The link is in the description of this podcast. It's also all over the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. All you've got to do is fill in the form telling Chapman what you would like to see from, what, you know, your dream specs are in a guitar. So they love getting that sort of feedback from people so that they can design by committee, or, you know, at least make things that are hopefully going to be popular with different demographics, and they're interested in your demographic, dear listener, the Guitar Nerds listeners. So far, it looks like I had an update. I think we're on around 500 entries now.
Wow. Amazing.
It looks like, so it looks like an offset shape is still the most popular. T-style has gained a little ground since last week when we spoke about it, but the offset shape is still the most popular. P90 has gone into the lead for bridge pickup now over humbucker. Wrong way around. P90 in the neck, humbucker in the bridge, no middle pickup, a satin finish. is ahead of Gloss, because obviously, dear listener, none of you have any taste, and a semi-translucent one-color paint job, standard six inline headstock. No trem, five-way blade, although a three-way toggle is hot on its heels for there. But that is the current spec.
Doesn't sound too much like a total homer, so it's all right.
No, exactly. And don't forget, I think it's probably going to be next week, or maybe we start after Guitar Summit, when we're going to start designing a guitar that actually will be built, which is the Pro Guitar, the vintage Pro Guitar Shop instrument.
Yes.
I've got to start that soon.
You also need to get in touch with Grez and find out where our our baritone basics,
yeah,
one pickup pink.
Oh, it's going to be the
monstrosity
best.
Is. I want it.
Did we say pink?
I can't remember. No, I think we said we might have said white. I can't remember. We'd have to go back. We need to go back and remind him of the specs to make sure he's building it correctly.
yeah, exactly.
But that it only popped into my mind the other day because I was reading I think it was Vintage Guitar Magazine. I think it was an advert for them in there. Just one of the American guitar magazines have so many more adverts
really
than Guitarist or Total Guitar.
Dude, there is an advert every three or four pages.
I think. In Guitar World, I think there's something like 11 pages of adverts before it actually gets to like the start.
Wow. Well, I mean, we shouldn't, we shouldn't dismiss that there are a lot of ads on this podcast at the moment. I really should put a limit on them, to be honest.
Or you just sign up to the wonderful Patreon.
Exactly,
and help
dear
keep
listener, yeah.
us afloat.
Yeah, if you're a Patreon listener, you have never been getting better value for money than you are now.
indeed. You're certainly cutting out a lot of ads.
Yeah.
But that's what keeps us alive.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, I want to talk about a little bit about one of our advertisers, actually, isotope.com, who have obviously worked very closely with the podcast for years and years. Dear listener, all the podcasts have, for certainly the last, I don't know, 3-4 years, been edited using Isotope software, using their vocal stuff to clean up Matt and my audio, and using their ozone mastering software to, bump all the volumes up so that it's at the right volume and, clear it, make it sound all coherent. It's very good. It's very good software, dear listener. They've just updated a bunch of stuff. So they've released a new version of Ozone. Isotope are now owned by Native Instruments. So that means that when those things come out, it's also in line with new Native Instruments. And Native Instruments have just released Guitar Rig 7 Pro. I will remind you, dear listener, there is a Guitar Nerds discount code on any of the Isotope stuff. And this is a pretty good time to get it because it applies to everything, I'm pretty sure. And they have their music production suite, which includes all of their things. So Neutron and Nectar, which are like vocal editing, things like that. And then things like Neoverb, which are a fantastic like reverb. Ozone, which is their mastering software. And wonderfully, Guitar Rig 7 Pro. I think all the things together are about $4,500. To buy.
Wow.
And you get the package reduces that by $3,800. So it's a really good deal. Or you can buy a couple of them individually and it's probably the same price. So it's worth looking at the music production.
Guitar Rig as well. What an absolute legendary piece of software.
Oh, it's so good, Matt. Why haven't I Do you use Guitar Rig? Have you used it? I haven't used it until the 77, and I was like, oh yeah, I'll have a look at this. I've been singing the praises of Helix Native recently, but I was like, I'll have a look at Guitar Rig 7. It's amazing.
Well, I just before I went on holiday, I had a good visit in Brighton with my our dear friend, Rabia, who's now got his new studio space down in Brighton.
Brighton, yeah.
And we were talking a lot about those kind of rigs because obviously he's got, he's a Quad Cortex endorser, he's got his own plugin, and, he's doing, I think he announced he's doing a new band. He played me some of the stuff, it sounds amazing. And we were talking about how he rehearses in there, and so much of and we were talking about what he does on Frog Leap, and everything he does, like, for Frog Leap or in the studio, he's like Quad Cortex and his plugin. He's like, it's just so quick, it's so easy, but he's like, it still doesn't. I still, if I'm going out and playing gigs, and when we do this new band, I want to take my two amps, I want to take my pedal board. And I think he's just really struck that balance, which I think most of us fall one side, the same side, which is, oh, I'll never use plugins because they don't feel the same, they don't sound the same. But it's just, realistically, it's just different tools for different jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was just playing me some of the guitar sounds, just gets so many monstrous guitar sounds direct into his computer through his plugins.
Yeah.
And his plugins have got this great synth sound on it. You know, he's got all this cool stuff on Quad Cortex. There's all this like detune and retune stuff that, you know, it's just really, really good. And he's like, it serves a great purpose. He's like rehearsing in the studio. Everyone in the band, apart from the drummers, on in-ears through Quad Cortex. He's like, it's great. But he's like, we plugged in the dual Kraken rig through his pedal board, and we're like, it sounds absolutely monstrous.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think things like guitar rig I have used, but again, because I'm not in the situation where that benefits me, I don't use it.
Right.
I think if I was doing a lot of recording, maybe. Also, for someone like me, I guess, who uses a lot of pedal and makes a lot of ambient guitar sounds for a lot of different pedals, is a plug-in the best thing? I don't know.
Well, it depends how, you know, there's always the option with a little bit of very simple MIDI, path making. That was a weird sentence. MIDIing. Let's call it MIDIing. With some simple MIDIing, you can assign stuff onto a little switcher. Use something like that Bluetooth. What was it? The EV1, the Bluetooth Expression pedal that Boss released.
Actually, I was messing around today with the FS1, which is the three button Bluetooth.
Yeah,
switch again.
Yeah, exactly. Things like that work out really well. So what I loved about Guitar Rig 7 Pro, as opposed to a lot of guitar amp plugins, is that they're just the amplifier. Maybe there are a couple of choice effects to go with it. But then anything else you're applying exists outside of that plugin. So how it interacts with it is going to be weird, you know. You can't put a separate reverb before the cab, you know, but after the amp head, for example, you know, everything would have to sit outside of the plugin. The cool thing about Guitar Rig 7, in much the same way as Helix, it has everything you could possibly need. So it's got loads of rack gear on there, loads of effects, loads of amplifiers and loads of cabs, and it gives you an effects chain that you can make mono or stereo, and you can do interesting things with that. There's so much stuff, like the presets that they have are excellent because it's native instrument. They have that quite unique interface where everything's done on almost keyword searching. Rather than sort of flicking through a great menu, which you can do as well. But they have a great range of presets that are already built in. I was trying out some of their gorgeous, they do a wonderful AC box, Vox AC30. They've got a great range of SVTs, which I thought sounded fantastic for bass, and just some really good reverb, great shimmers, but gorgeous, lush sounding tremolos. And with these things, the first thing, whenever I've got a guitar amp plug-in, I know it's going to do very clean very well, and I know it's going to do high gain very well, because that's bread and butter for plugins. It's trying to sound like a real amplifier that, you know, it is what I want to do. I want to see if it works like that. I loved this. I couldn't quite tell how much of it was because I'm now playing everything on my Telecaster, and I love my Telecaster. So I couldn't work out how much was the Tele just being better than anything else ever, and how much of it was the plugin. But
right,
you know, I thought it sounded great. And it has like a cabinet IR loader on there as well. So, you know, you can add all your favorite IRs into Guitar Rig and have them interact with the pedals.
I think what's funny, I remember this probably a year or so ago, I think Rabia posted on Instagram just like this massive riff, like huge distorted guitar sound, and they just like turned the plugin off, and it's like dunk 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 dunk, and just how funny everything, like how much it just totally changed your guitar sound. I think for me, I always just want something a little bit more hands on, but you know, maybe when I've moved and I've got my new setup. I don't know, because I've only got a little bit of time to spare. Perhaps it's always just for me. I'm just like, I'll just plug into an amp and a bunch of pedals. I don't deny how good things like, you know, guitar, certainly things like Guitar Rig, which to me is like the OG, really, that, you know, that I always remember. That was the one that sort of everyone had. Just for me, it was like, it's just a really, really cool bit of software.
Yeah. Yeah, I have been incredibly impressed. I thought, because I know it's the seventh iteration, I understand that, dear listener, but because it was one of the original ones, I almost wrote it off as probably has been outdated by other things.
Mm.
But it was absolutely fantastic. Some of the best bluesy guitar sounds I've ever had. I really liked it. But it depends, Matt, like what you do. Like, do you record ever much? Like, because if you have to get ideas down fast, there's nothing better than a plugin.
Well, that is the thing, really. I have made many a promise to myself and then never actually done it. And I keep saying, oh, you just need this, or you just need this, and that's always a terrible way to think about it. I guess because I didn't think I'd be here that long.
Yeah.
And I say by here, I mean at my parents' house.
Yeah, it doesn't mean in life.
But so I think when I move and I get the new space set up, what I want to do is have the cabs mic'd up all the time and basically everything sort of ready to go. Because a couple of times recently, certainly I came back from holiday and I was like, oh man, this is a great sound. I want to record it really quickly. Or I just want to be able to record like jams, I guess, that I have here, and then pull sections out of it, and then I'm like, oh, it sounds really good, and I'm like, oh, I should record it, and it's like, I can't dial the same sound in a plug-in quickly.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, for me, certainly ideas come out from the pedals and the sounds.
Of course, and the pedal board's going to interact differently with plugins than it is a real-world amplifier.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it's more about having a quick and easy way to just always just be able to hit record. Yeah. Quite recently, I was like, oh, maybe I'll just buy one of those. Roland Boss used to make them. I think we basically invented that market early on. It's like the desktop recorder, and get like a BR desktop recorder and just have everything in that. But I'm like, actually, if I just mic stuff up and reamp box is going,
tube amp expander, Wazzacraft tube amp expander.
I know
the solution. But what I have for exactly what you're saying is, you can see behind me, Matt, on the little video call, the Boss Katana. That is, via its line out, permanently plumbed into one of my channels on my interface.
Yeah.
So whenever I'm messing around, if I think of something, I can record that dead quickly, and the line out with the cab sim on the Katana's, you know, really good. Certainly good enough for any demo ideas for guitar. And the other side of that, I've got the little Boss, the bass cube. What do they call it? The XL? The XL? I can't remember.
Dual Cube LX.
No, the Dual Cube was the guitar one. Oh, it's the bass. Yeah.
Oh, DCB LX.
Yeah, something. That was it. Yeah. Catchy name. But I've got
which
that.
Which is basically, that's, well, actually, it is Dual Cube Bass LX, right. But the code is DCB LX.
I see. But yeah, that's also plumbed into another channel just on my interface. And
I think what I want to do is just have, because I've got a 57 and I've got an Aston Spirit and I've got this Rode mic, which I use. And I just want to be able to have like a room mic and then a cab mic, and then basically just be able to hit record really quick. Like I said, mainly for like jam bits and then pull stuff out and I don't know, mess around with it afterwards, but just sort of haven't had the time. And I guess it's just down to me to find the time.
Yeah, of course. How much is a tube amp expander? They are about £1,100. Go for.
We talked about it for ages, Joe, and then you never finished sorting it out. But we talked about getting a two notes at one point, didn't we?
I know. That's totally on me. I meant to get you a two notes because they're such a lovely, affordable version. But the problem is, I've been doing a bunch of research on impulse responses recently. I've been writing an article on impulse responses, and it's something that has never really interested me that much. I've never really, you know, it's one of those things. IRs are that thing that it's for metal guys, you know. I don't need an IR, I just have a good amp. But actually learning about how that stuff works, how remarkable it is that we're able to capture those perfect sonic recreations of not just cabinets of the entire setup, the rack gear, and that it's not interpretations. It's not like a cab sim is someone taking their best stab at what they think a line of things. So they want to do a 412 orange cabinet, then a cab sim sounds roughly like an orange 412 cabinet, but not a specific one, whereas an IR is an actual, you know, scientific, accurately sampled digital recreation of a particular unit. So the fact that you can have all this amazing gear from vintage gear from studios that's been modeled and captured is absolutely incredible. And so it's made me be like, you know what I want? Boss Wessercraft tube amp expander, because it's the best one.
Yeah, and it is wicked. I do love that thing. I guess the only problem is if you're running stereo rig, you basically need two of them. Although that's just a ridiculous problem, realistically.
Yeah.
Which is why I wanted to have stuff mic'd up, because then I was like, oh, I could just mic up, because I run two amps into one cab. So I was like, oh, if I just mic that up. But we'll get there eventually. We'll get there eventually.
Find a way.
Indeed.
Yeah, we will.
How did we get here, Joe? We sort of ampled into... we've gone from your dream playing a gig of old prog to Telecasters to somehow talking about recording. Oh, that's it. Guitar Rig 7.
That was it. Yeah, we were
talking about sponsors, our sponsors of this week, Guitar Rig 7.
Yeah. It's very good. I've had a great time playing it.
Yeah, I think there's certain... You could definitely get some inspiration out of plugins and sounds, because you can patch things together in a totally different way to how you would patch guitar pedals.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, again, that's exciting and inspirational in its own way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I spent a lot of money on my pedal board, so I should use it really, shouldn't I?
Yes, you should. You absolutely should. Well, that we are actually drawing to the end of this week's podcast. Matt and I are going to head over to Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. We're going to talk about some questions of the week, questions and subjects that I've taken from the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. John Bai was asking about, he was saying, what's the best guitar you've ever owned? Doesn't have to be the most expensive, but the one you rated the most. Intrigued to see if there's any sleeper brands. So I thought I'd read. There's been a bunch of comments on that, so I thought I'd read some of those. We'll have a look, see what's popular and what's not, and then maybe talk about our own. Moot Gravitz looking for a recommendation on a delay pedal, something off the beaten track. But he's got some price limits there, so we'll have a little look at that. And Keith Aitken recently dusted off his original Pod 1. And so maybe we'll talk about, you know, the forefather of plugins. Also, Andy Manley found this amazing website, mydreampartscaster.com. We could talk about some of the incredible stuff on there.
Cool. But, sounds good.
Yeah, it does. It does. But yeah, so we're going to head over there. Do join us, dear listener, patreon.com/guitar nerds. You can support this community for as little as $1 a month. Yes. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much, you wonderful people. Thank you especially to our $10 top tier Patreon backers. Very soon, some of you will be receiving your
goodie bags. But for now, thank you very much to Nicholas Strong, Rocket Rob Patterson, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Russ Meehan, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, Daniel Walker, John Conaway, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Mark Izal Kadawaki, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Storr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and Moog Gravit.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.